Go ahead.
Okay. The learning should be for Refuah Shlema Prachaya Edel Adina Bas Esther.
Refuah Shlema to her, and she should continue to have strength for many years. All right, I'm about to say, let's jump back into Perek Chaf Hei. Right now,
I'm whispering. That's
okay. All right, so we read through Perek Chaf Hei last week, and I'm assuming everybody was here. If you weren't here, it's online. Story of Naval HaKarmeli, as he's referred to in the Mefarshim, right? Because he's from Carmel, or his work is in Carmel, so he's identified as Naval HaKarmeli. Let's go back to the beginning of the story. I want to start to kind of focus on pieces of it as we go through. Starting with Pasuk Bet. V'ish b'ma'on u'ma'aseu ba'karmel v'ya'ish gadol ma'od v'lo tzon 3,000 ve'elef izim v'hi b'gzoz et tzono ba'karmel. This man who lived in Ma'on, or was from Ma'on, his work was in Carmel, or his fields were in Carmel, was a great man, a big, meaning wealthy man, Gadol Ma'od, with huge livestock, huge flocks, Tzon, 3,000 Elef, Izim, 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and came to the celebration of the shearing of the flock. Obviously, that's a major moment in the agricultural and economic cycle of the year. As we see later on, David refers to Yom Tov Banu. We came when they made a big feast, Mishteh Gadol. Naval is described as being in the middle of a big feast and getting drunk. They're not just shearing the flock. This is evidently some major celebration and feast and overwhelming wealth being displayed in the context in which David's people arrive with the request for a little bit of compensation for the work that they did. V'shem ha'ish Naval, v'shem ishto Avigail, so we're introduced to him and to her, Naval, and his wife Avigail, v'ha'isha tovat sechel v'fat to'ar, she was Tovat Sechel, intelligent, bright, Mifatar, beautiful, Ve'aish, Kashe, V'ra Malalim, the man was hard, stubborn, difficult, evil, Ra Malalim, V'hu Chalibi. The word Chalibi is going to occupy our discussion, at least for the first part of today's shiur. So from the outset, we have a kind of a character assessment, or assassination, whatever the... we have a character assessment of our two critical players in the story, namely Naval and
Avigail.
And from that assessment, we already have a bias to the story, meaning we already know, which is quite extraordinary, we know from the outset how the text is going to view the actions of Naval and the actions of Avigail. So whatever occurs, whatever takes place, if there's more than one way to understand it, positive or negative, we are told from the outset that our judgment of the behavior of the personalities in the story needs to be in line with how the text is portraying them, which is to see Naval as an ish kasher v'ra ma'alalim, difficult, wicked person, and to see Avigail as both beautiful but also intelligent, which is a very unique description of a woman in Tanakh. Extraordinary. I don't think that there is another parallel. There are lots of people in Tanakh who are described as yifat ma'er, yifat tor, male and female. Right? There are many people described as such, from Esther and Yosef and Sarah and
What about Berea?
Berea's not in Tanakh.
Oh,
Oh, but was she considered?
Purya is in the world of the Chacham, it's a different story. Right? In the world of the Gemara is a different story. Different. But in the context of Tanakh, the description of personalities to describe anybody as Tavat Sechel, I think is extraordinary. I don't even think that there is a other than, you know, there's a description of Shlomo as Chacham because Shlomo chose wisdom in the dream of Givon, but you typically don't see intelligence as a description of any character in Tanakh. It's just not a use that would application that we see often to describe Avigail as Isha Tovat Sechel is a reflection, I think, of the extraordinary esteem with which this parak holds Avigail and what she does.
Can I ask a question?
You
is
may.
Is there any significance why, because I'm always interested in all this stuff, why in Pasuk Gimel, Avigail, her name does not have a yud after the vet, but when you go back to Pasuk Yudalit, it has a yud after the vet. I mean,
Chirik Malay and Chirik Chaser.
They just liked it both ways.
It gets very technical grammar. I don't know.
Okay.
They're usually consistent, but not always. Liao, this Liao in a couple of places in Tanakh is spelled Aliyah without a vav. Yaakov is usually spelled without a vav. There's a couple of places in Tanakh where Yaakov is spelled with a vav. Yerushalayim is spelled without a second yud. In most places, except for 10 places where it's spelled with.
Okay.
I don't know that there is a
consistent.
There probably is, but it's it gets a little bit too esoteric.
Okay,
I think
that's
so.
Fine.
Ketiv and Kri also. You have to remember that, and this we're going to see here in the context of the word Kalibi, especially in the world of Nach. We have to be careful putting too much significance on the way things are read or the way things are written, because remember, they're unlike Chumash, which was, they're all copied manuscripts by hand, but unlike Chumash, which because of the Kedusha of Chumash and because it was read publicly and scrutinized publicly, and every letter, a single letter, apostles and sefer, the amount of accuracy and care was far greater than it was in the world of Tanakh. Give you another example on the same level. Take a look at Pasuk Yudchet. How is Avigail spelled in Pasuk Yudchet?
That's really
good.
With a vav. With a vav, not a yud, right?
Right?
Now, it's not hard to mistake a yud and a vav. And one of the most common discrepancies between what we call ketiv and kri is a vav and a yud. We'll see that in Kalibi. Right? To turn a yud into a vav, just you make your yud too long and it looks like a vav. You make your vav too short, it looks like a yud. So that's it. So here I have Avigail without a yud, Avigail with a yud, and Avigail with a vav. So to build a theory around it would be a challenge.
Okay.
There's a place in the Megillat Esther, Achashverosh, and the end of the Megillah is spelled Achashvash, right? Without a, also Ketiv and Kri. There's yuds and vavs are complicated in the world of a world of Nach. And Chumash were much more careful, and therefore we are more likely to find a drasha of some kind on a yud here or above there, but less so in the world of Tanakh. Okay, so that's part one of our introduction to Naval, is to understand that there is a very clear judgment from the perspective of the text as to the behavior of the three, or certainly the two principal players here, Naval and Avigail. The question that we're going to raise much later in our study of this parak is David, and whether and how much justification there was for David's actions through the story. But to see Naval clearly is to see his challenge, his difficulty, his behavior being that which is extraordinarily negative and described so from the beginning. Ish kasheh v'ra malalim. Avigail goes one step further. Her description of David, her description of Naval, is even worse. Although, you have to take that one with a grain of salt.
Except we're told she's intelligent, so there's an assumption that she is articulate and knows what she's saying.
She certainly knows what she's saying, but
she also knows who she's speaking to.
Right, and that's part of the issue, is that when she describes her husband, and she does so in that kind of negative fashion, it's in Pasuk... Pasuk Chaf Hei. When she's speaking to David and she says, "Al na yasim adoni et libo el ish habliya al hazeh al naval ki kishmo kein hu naval shmo univala imo." Right. Don't pay any attention to that worthless man. In English, you probably would have put in some kind of initials after that word worthless. Al naval ki kishmo kein hu. He is like his name, namely naval shmo. Univalaimo. His name is Naval, and he is a Nivala. Nivala is an abomination. So, I mean, she plays on the words, she plays on the name, she plays on the phrase Kishmo Kenu is also an interesting phrase because it's become a colloquialism or an idiom in modern Hebrew, and usually in a positive context. Talk about somebody who's, you know, a person of great stature with a great name, Kishmo Kenu, right? Yes. A significant name. So it's a very powerful phrase. In its original context, it's very negative because it's describing Naval, who
so
is
this
a...
This is the original context.
This is the original context.
Interesting. But we always think of positive.
We did that a lot with a lot of phrases. It's not... I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's just you have to know where it comes from. But that context is a little bit of a grain of salt because... Naval, because Abigail is speaking to David, and so she's trying to belittle Naval in David's eyes because she's making the argument that he's not worth the fight.
But it's her husband, you realize.
Right, but it is her husband, and that's, but on the other hand, so here, so if all I had was that statement, you could take it as a kind of a that's
rebellion.
Well, sort of her attempt to bring David off the ledge by calming the waters by saying, "Oh, you don't need to worry about him. He's just an idiot. You know, like, leave him alone. You know, what does he know? He's an idiot." Whereas here in pasuk Gimel, this is not Abigail speaking, and this is not David speaking. This is the Navi speaking, and this is the author of the Sefer. So here we have an objective description of the role of Naval and the role of Abigail and the personality of Naval and Abigail, and in that context the description of Ukashev Ram Alalim is much more intense, because this is what we call a Shiput Mikra'i. This is the judgment of the Navi, the judgment of the text, to assess Naval and his role and his personality and his behavior. And we see it in the way David greets him initially with such respect and such kindness. Shalom lecha, lecha shalom, you should have peace, your house should have peace, we worked for you, etc., we just want our payment. And Naval's response, mi David u mi ben Yishai rabu avadim hamitparzim ish mipnei Adonai. Right? Who is this David? Who is Ben Yishai? Another renegade slave in the world we don't need. Right? So the gross attitude and ingratitude that Naval shows to David is, I think, a reflection of this kind of judgment on his character. Yes.
This might be a little far fetched, but Linda and I were talking. Is Naval with the letters turned around and with the work and everything? Could it be any play on Lavan? Is that a weird kind of... No, okay.
No. My response is going to be weighed. Number one, there is a medrash that says exactly that. Number two, we're not ready for it.
Okay.
But we will. Because as our study of the story follows through, one of our pieces is going to be an analysis of the story of Naval and how he treats David,
right,
to the relationship between Lavan and Yaakov. So yes, wow, it's on the curriculum. Stay tuned. Wow. Well done.
Well done.
But we're not there yet.
No, I just, when you start talking,
but
about,
yes, Naval, there's a medrash that links a few different stories in Tanakh to individuals whose names are read backwards and forwards, and the significance of it. So, Er, Ura, B'nei Hashem, son of Tamar, son of Yehuda, story of Yehuda and Tamar. Her son is Er, Ayin Resh. The pasuk says for Hura, Resh Ayin, Noach, Matzachin. Okay, it's a play on the words backwards and forwards. And that same medrash talks about Naval and connects it to Lavan, which is the name backwards. We'll come back to it. Staying on Pasuk Gimel for a moment, I want to take a look at this word Kalibi, because this word Kalibi generates a whole discussion. What is the word Kalibi and what does it mean? And to add a little bit of intrigue, there's a Ketiv and Kri here. We pronounce it Kalibi, but if you look at it carefully, you'll see that in the text it says
Kalbo
or Kilibo. Kalbo is not a word, or Kilibo. Kalibo. It's a vav, not a yod. So the question that Mefarshim ask is, what is Kalibi? What does the word mean? Where does it come from? And what is its significance? So I've given you a kind of a cross-section. There are basically three major approaches to it. They are summarized in the Radak, but we'll start with Rashi. V'hu Kalibi, says Rashi. Notice Rashi doesn't work with, doesn't even include the... Does everybody here know what a Ketiv and Kri is? What? No? So you have this phenomenon in Tanakh often, where there will be a discrepancy between the letters as they're written and the way we pronounce a word. Sometimes it's intentional, and sometimes it's just because over the course of time, letters get confused, and very often it's a vav and yud. That's the most common form of Ketiv and Kri, or an extra yud or an extra vav, where the vowels change. But sometimes it's intentional. Sometimes it's clearly there to... there's one place in Torah where there's an entire word that's written one way and we pronounce it, we read a different word in its place. It's a famous case. But the classic, and it's referred to as a Ketiv and Kri, meaning how
written
things are written versus how they are
read.
Okay, so they're written one way and read another way. And this is exactly that case. The Ketiv here is Chaf Lamed Bet Vav.
Mm-hmm.
The Kri is Chaf Lamed Bet Yud Ke Li Bi. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So Chalibi.
Chalibi.
The Chal is just because it's well, we'll see what the Chalibi is. Chalibi. So Rashi starts with the Kri, V'hu Chalibi, and he says it means Mibet Kalev, not from the word Kelev, but from the word Kalev. Kalev is a name. Who is the most, and there are a few people in Tanakh called Kalev, who is the most famous Kalev that we know of?
Kalev Ben
Yefuneh. There's more than one, but there's certainly one by the name of Kalev ben Yefuneh, and it's possible that the reference here is to Kalev ben Yefuneh of Chumash fame, right? Story of Meraglim, Yeshua and Kalev, Kalev is from Shevet Yehuda, Yis Nashi of Shevet Yehuda. Quite possible that we could identify Naval from the lineage of Kalev ben Yefuneh. We would have to examine and explore that through the labyrinth of Divrei Hayamim to see if that works, but certainly that's a possibility. But he's certainly identified here as Mibet Kalev, Rashi says, from the house of Kalev of Shevet Yehuda. The Radak references that story as well. Bu Chalibi, Hayud, says the Radak, Liyachas. The Yud is a yud of yachas. I'll explain what that means in a moment. Lefi shehaya mimishpachat Kalev, because he was of the family of Kalev, and therefore Karu Kain, this is how he's called. V'ketargum Yonatan, the Targum here translates it as v'hu midebet Kalev. He comes from the house of Kalev. So what does he mean by yud hayachas? What is
the yud at the end?
The yud at the end. Yud at the end, he says, is not part of the shoresh.
Why do you say Yerushalmi?
But, right. Like the okay. So the modern equivalent would be a Yerushalmi.
Yeah.
Okay. In Chumash, it's very common. If you take a look, for example, in Bamidbar Perak Chaf Vav. The census of the families of Israel as they are taken in the Midbar. Perek Chavav, Bamidbar, Perek Chavav, starting with Pasuk. Hey, just as a random sample. 26:5. Does everybody have it? So Reuven, right? Going through the list of the households of Yaakov. Reuven, B'choy Yisrael. Reuven, firstborn. B'nei Reuven, Chanoch. Firstborn was Chanoch. Mishpachat ha-Chanochi. Nefalu, Mishpachat ha-Aloi. Nechetzron, Mishpachat ha-Chetzroni. Necharmi, Mishpachat ha-Karmi. Eile Mishpachot ha-Reuveni. So what happened here? A series of families listed, and as you identify the name of the head of the household, and all of those who are descendant of that household are identified by the name of the household. So Chetzron and all those who are of the family of Chetzron, and that is referred to as Mishpachat Chetzroni. Okay. Now, sometimes the grammar doesn't allow that. For example,
Karmi
already ends with a yud, so they would just keep it Mishpachat Karmi, right? Or Palu, you have to change the grammar around in order to create Mishpachat Palu'i. Right? You have to change some of the vowels, etc. But essentially, you get the same concept, and this you'll see throughout the Yichus Pasuk Yud Bet. I meant. B'nei Shimon l'mishpachotam l'nimuel mishpachat ha-nimueli Yamin mishpachat ha-yemini Yachin mishpachat ha-yachini Zerach mishpachat ha-zerchi Shaul mishpachat ha-shauli Ele mishpachot ha-shimoni from Shimon and so on and so forth. You could go through the whole parasha. It makes for a Baal Kore's nightmare.
It's a little boring for everybody else too.
Well, so that's exactly what the Radak refers to when he says that the language here for Hu Kalibi is the Yud Hayachas of the Mishpacha, the Bayit, the household, the lineage of Kalev. He is of the Kalev family or the Kalev household. That's how Rashi understood it, and that's the first suggestion in the Radak. We're going to come back to identifying the Kalev in a moment, but first I want to share with you the two other suggestions of the Radak. There is a difficulty in this suggestion. Actually, before you even read the Radak, what do you think the difficulty, textual difficulty, is in this interpretation?
Because sometimes there'll be a yud at the end that have nothing to do with the yichus.
Yeah, but more specifically in this pasuk. In this pasuk, what's the challenge in identifying Kalibi as a reference to the lineage of the household from which he comes?
Difference in the goodness of Caleb?
No. You know, let's look at the other two interpretations. We'll come back to my question. Voktiv, says the Radak, who bit Vav. Let's Radak actually was known for often interpreting both the Ketiv and the Kri. Most Mefarshim ignore the Ketiv because we just follow the Kri. Radak consistently often interprets the Ketiv as well. If I look at the Ketiv with a Vav, the word is not Kalibi, but Kilibo. Kilibo means
like his heart.
Kilibo, like his heart. Ve'efshar lefaresh ha-kaf l'shimush kefi ha-ktiv, right? It's possible. Then the kaf would not be part of the shoresh, would not be, this gets grammatical, but it wouldn't be part of the kalev lineage, kalibi, but rather the prefix ke. V'hu ke libo, like his heart. So then the chaf becomes not part of the shoresh, but part of the what's called otiot hashimush, right? What's referred to as bachlam, the bet kaf lamed mem, prefixes that can refer to the, like prepositions. So he is ke libo, like his heart. Says the Radak, that would mean Ken haya ma'em ma'asav ra'im kemo sheya libo ra, just as his actions were evil, v'hu ke libo, so was his heart. Ki yesh b'nei adam ma'asehem na'im v'libam ra. There are some people who have, you know, they're just, they're inside, they bear all kinds of animosity and grudges, but you know, when it comes to interpersonal behavior, they know how to tone it down and be nice to people. And there are others who are in reverse, right? Sometimes they're very good people, but they do stupid, mean things. V'u'aya tocho kiboro, uboro ketocho. His inside was like his outside was like his inside. He was consistent. Al tisnat achicha bilvavecha. Don't hate your friend in your heart. Hate him outside rather than just in your heart. Right? That's how he interpreted the phrase. Right? The pasuk says, don't hate your brother in your heart. Meaning, love your neighbor, right? You should not, right? Don't hate him, love him, right? Naval took it a little differently. He said, don't hate your brother in your heart. Hate him outside too. You know, hate him all around. You might as well enjoy the ride. So, says the Radak, second interpretation, v'hu, not kalibi, but v'hu chelibo. He was as bad and rotten to the core, as we would use the colloquialism, rotten to the core as he was in his behavior. All right, we'll get to the third interpretation in a second. It's a variation on the first. Coming back to the verse, to the text, Pasuk Gimel. V'shem ha'ish naval v'shem ishto ha'vigar v'ishato v'atzecha v'ifatoa v'ish kashef v'ram ha'lalim v'hu chalibo kilibo or v'hu chalibi. Textually, even though the pshat of Kalibi, I think the vast majority of Mefarshim would agree, is in accordance with the first interpretation, right? That he is Mibet Kalev, okay, Kalibi. The Radak is suggesting that this is the Kri, that the Ketiv here is Ke-li-bo, it means that he is Tocho Ke-boro, that his inside is like his outside, he is as rotten in his behavior, in his heart, as he is in his behavior towards others. From a pshat perspective, while the word itself, I think, lends itself to the first interpretation, there's a reason why the Radak offers the second interpretation. It's not just because it's the Kri. There's something in the text that's bothering the Radak, and I think it's very important for us to see the context here. So something in the text, if I look at the word Kalibi as a pure lineage identification, there's a problem in the text.
Where it comes.
Why?
Because it doesn't identify him that at the beginning, but it comes after how bad he was.
Right. Because the placement of this lineage identification comes after the character assassination or description, right? The If it was a pure lineage question, then it really belongs in Pasuk Bet. Ve'ish b'ma'on, maseo b'kamel, or ve'ish mi bet kalev b'ma'on, maseo b'kamel. I'm identifying who he is, where he lived, where, what region he's from, what family he's from. Shema ish naval, or shema ish naval akalibi, right? Along those lines. Whereas if I throw it into the list of Aish Kashev, Rama Alalim, Vahukalibi, right, I throw it as a postscript onto Kashev, Rama Alalim, this evil, wicked person. Oh, and by the way, he's from the house of Kalev. It's like, where's that coming from? Whereas if Vahukalibo means he's as bad on the inside as he is on the outside, then suddenly there's a consistency to the verse and to the text. So even though the word Kalibi, I think, is the pshat of it is from the house of Kalev, the Radak is bothered, I think, as much by the Kri as he is by the placement of this word in the sequence of this text. The text seems to use Vahu Kalibi as a pejorative. Is he was Kasher, Amalalim, and Kalibi. Kalibi is a Yichus. It's not a pejorative. Right. So that's the problem. Yeah.
It's interesting that the Chumash talks about the characteristics of Abigail first before it gets into
there's two ways to look at that, either because she could be the hero of the story, right, so it's, she's more significant. There's also I could give you a much less satisfying answer, which is first in last out, meaning if you look at the pasuk, it's v'shem ha'ish naval v'shem ishto avigail v'isha tavat sech v'tavat ma'e v'ish kashe. In other words, I've gone A-B-B-A, chiastic structure. Right, A, B,
so
B, A. Naval, Avigail, Avigail, Naval. Maybe. I'm saying that you could look at it that way, or you could make the claim that Naval and Avigail is the hero. So her description comes first. Tavat Sechal, Tavat Mareh. And Naval, we could do without. So I could leave it. Look at that either way. So third possibility, and that was one I think we picked up last week as well, that the word Kalibi is has no precedent or no other place in Tanakh where the word appears in that form, and Kalibi could also mean, if I assume that the Yud here is not the Yud HaYichus, but some other description, like a character description rather than a lineage description, then I get the phrase Yud at the end can often mean kimo,
yeah.
Like
doggish.
Doggish. Kimo.
Dog like.
And that becomes dog.
Okay. That's an insult,
which is not, is not, which is not a positive description. And that the Radak says, the third possibility, v'yesh lefaresh kilibi me'inyan gri'ut ma'asav yachaso lekelev.
Well, it fits in the description.
It does,
so
it,
far.
Right. It, again, it, so what the third interpretation does, just to clarify, is the first interpretation works off the word itself, which is probably the closest to pshat. We're going to come back to it. Recognizing, however, that the problem in the text is that you've got this phrase at the end of a description of his character, the Radak first goes to the Ktiv, which is the Kilibo, to offer a character interpretation based on the Ktiv, and then creatively offers a character interpretation based on the Kri, meaning, okay, let's go back to the fact that it doesn't say Kilibo, it says Kalibi. Says, okay, well, I can say that that's also a character interpretation. Kalev, Kalev, not so far apart. Kalibi, yeah, come on, Kalev, I buy it. And then I have a third. Kashet, Ramalalim, come on, Kalev.
Fits in.
How do you know what it says? Because it says both.
No, it doesn't say both. It has one way it's written and one way it is pronounced. So you have to understand that you have to accept the fact that there's a Masoret and the tradition of Torah Sheba'al Peh of how every word in Tanakh is pronounced.
Oh, so the second one that's...
If you look at the way... Every Tanakh prints it differently. In the current Tanakh, it puts the way it's written without the vowels, and then the second word, which is how it's pronounced with the vowels, puts it into the margin. The art school puts it into parentheses. Each Tanakh is different, but or with a little asterisk, right? Right. Every Tanakh prints them differently, but if you were reading this as a Haftorah, for example, you would read in accordance with the way it is vocalized. Not the way it is spelled.
Okay. Thank you.
Part of the challenge in Hebrew is that your vowels are not part of the alphabet.
Right.
So your alphabet are your consonants and your vowels are separate, which in a original context of Tanakh was not written in the Tanakh itself. The actual vowels were written, were oral. So that also gave way to various ways to pronounce. All right, so let's come back to the question of who is Kalev, and if there's some happy medium marriage combination we can create out of these two vastly different interpretations of Kalev and Kemo Kelev, which would be quite a feat if we could pull that stunt off. But. So two possibilities of Kalev. One is, as we've said, is Kalev ben Yifune. For this, I need my map. Hang on a second. Remembering that Ma'on and Devir are here in what we refer to today as Drom Har Chevron, the southern hills of south of Hebron, near Devir, sort of this region here. The fact, if that's where he is, Ma'on and Carmel, the link to Kalev as Kalev ben Yefune is not so far afield. See, there's another possibility, but turn to, actually in the source page you have the Hebrew, but if you want the English translation, it's Shoftim Perek Aleph. I'm going to turn to there. Shoftim Perek Aleph. We go all the way back to Shoftim. I'm not going to ask for show of hands or how many remember learning Shoftim with me or with anybody else.
It was a long time ago, right?
Yes.
Perek Aleph. It's even longer. Pasuk Yud. Perek Aleph of Shoftim is really a summary of the end of Sefer Yehoshua. It's kind of a summary of key events that took place in the end of the Sefer Yehoshua, the conquest and the settlement of the land of Israel in various tribes in different places, and summarizes that whole story by 8 or 10 chapters long in one introductory parak of Shoftim. Vayelech Yehuda el Hakna'ani Yoshev b'Chevron, and it's describing how each tribe went and conquered the region of their tribal territory. Yehuda went and conquered the area of Chevron. Do you remember the story of the spies? Do you remember the spies go up from the south, from Kadesh Barnea? And the 12 spies who went, right, including Yehoshua and Kalev ben Yefuneh. So they come up from the south. Then the pasuk says, Vayavo ad Chevron, which grammatically means he entered Chevron. Right. And Rashi there points out that that word, the verb for entering Chevron, was in the singular rather than the plural. And Rashi points out that only one went to Chevron, and that was Kalev ben Yefuneh, Litpalel kever avot, to pray to the avot that they should give him strength from this very bad crowd of people that he's with. And in the end, Chevron was associated with Kalev ben Yefuneh. So when Yehuda goes to begin the conquest of Chevron, v'shem Chevron lefanim kiyat arba, v'yaku et sheshai v'et achiman v'et tamai, they conquer the major players, the big giants who live there. And Vayelech Misham Yeshvei Devir, they come from Chevron to Devir, which is not far. This is all the areas in the south. v'shem dvir lefanim ki yatsefer. Vayomer Kalev, right? The coming, and Kalev is the head of the tribe. Kalev is the general and the nasi of the tribe. And Kalev is the only one, he and Yeshua are the only two who survived the story of the spies. 40 years later, Yeshua is the leader of the whole people, but Kalev is the head of Shevet Yehuda. And Kalev goes and he says, Ashiyaket ki atsefru l'chada benatatilot achsa biti l'isha. Anybody goes and conquers the city of Devir, I will reward them with the hand of my daughter. Sort of reminds you of Shaul. Before. Sort of reminds us of Shaul and Goliath, right? Vayilkada Otniel ben Knaz achi Kalev akaton mimenu. So the city was conquered by Otniel ben Knaz, Kalev's younger brother, which probably in this case means that Knaz is Kalev's younger brother, and Otniel is therefore his nephew, which would make Otniel and Achsa first cousins. Vaitenot Achsa bitol Isha. Vahi, so and he conquers the city of Devir, and he's given the hand of Achsa in marriage. Vahi bivoa, vatisiteu lishol me'et avia hasadeh. She came and she wanted to ask of her father for a special gift of a territory or land of the of a field. Batitznach me'al chamor, v'yomar la Kalev malach. She comes to her father. Kalev says to her, what can I offer you? Batomer lo, havali bracha. I need a special bracha. Why do I need a special bracha? Ki eretz hanegev nitatani. Because you have given me the territorial region of the Negev. And up until the modern era, the Negev was a challenge because it's a desert. There's no water. V'natatali gulot mayim. I also need some kind of spring or water source. V'yiten l'Kalev et gulot dilit v'et gulot tachdit. So he gave her additional areas that were identified as areas that had spring water in order for her to be able to use this land of the Negev in some kind of effective way. So Kalev, so the story of Kalev, the only story that we have here is not just the conquest of Hebron and the Negev or Devir, but also an identification of the nature of the land in which they were living. Challenging land, difficult land, land that was a desert, and the need therefore to expand the reach to an area of the Gulot Mayim that were in that region as well. The area, therefore, according to at least one interpretation, becomes identified with Kalev's name. So that whole region of this part of the Negev becomes identified with Kalev's name. Now turn to Shmuel Aleph Perek Lamed, end of Shmuel Aleph. The story we're going to come back to many times because there are so many links between the two that it's story of Tziklag. Shmuel Aleph, chapter 30. What pasuk will come to in a second. Right. So background to the story. Tziklag is a city in Eretz Plishtim, or on the border between Eretz Plishtim and Eretz Yehuda. Not on this map here, it's Lachish, it's somewhere over here.
We've talked about
the story many times. It's a city which Achish Melech Gat, the Plishtin king, gives to David for him to settle there together with his family, with all of his men and their families and their children and their wives. So they take over the city of Tziklag, and that's their hometown. In the famous battle of the war at Har Gilboa, when Shaul is facing the Plishtim of north, and the battle that eventually Shaul will meet his death, David goes, in accordance with his oath to the king of the Plishtim, goes to fight together with Achish. Potential civil war. In the end, Achish dismisses him of that oath and sends him back home and says, we don't need you, my people don't trust you, we don't want you here, go home. As he comes home, he finds that in the absence, in that short period of time that he and his warriors had migrated, had gone north to fight with with Achish, Amalek had come and attacked the city of Ziklag and taken all of the women and children captive to sell them as slaves in Egypt on the slave trade.
You said Amalek, but you mean the Philistine.
No, Amalek. Oh. I said Amalek, I meant Amalek. Okay? So if you take a look at Pasuk, Pasuk Aleph. Vayhi bevod David v'nashav Ziklag, v'yom ha-shlishi, the third day, David and his people came to Ziklag. Va'amaleki pashtu el Negev, the Amalek had pushed from the south to the city, through the Negev, to the city of Ziklag. Vayaku et Ziklag, vayisrifu ota be'esh, they conquered Ziklag, razed it to the ground. Vayishbu et ha-nashim asher ba mikaton v'ad gadol. And they captured all of the women and all the children. Lo emitu ish. They didn't kill anybody. Why didn't they kill anybody?
They didn't have to.
They're going
to
take them as slaves.
Right, because it would be counterproductive when your parnasa is the slave trade, and killing them is counterproductive. One of the places we see what and who Amalek really were. The story is critically important for all kinds of understanding related to the story of Amalek in Shaul, related to the story of Amalek in Chumash, who and what Amalek was.
And the men were all with David anyway, so...
That's exactly why they took advantage right. of the absence right. of the and army to defend them by attacking, and if you remember the story in Chumash, the pasuk that says that Amalek attacked the weak and the stragglers behind. Classic modus operandi is not to fight the war, but to capture or to pounce on the defenseless and then capture them and sell them as slaves. That's Amalek's modus operandi. That's who they are. That explains, and we'll talk about this when we get to the story, but that explains a great deal about the whole background to Amalek. David comes back. The city is razed, and the women and children are all taken captive. David cries, and the people cry. His wives are captured, Achinoam Israelit, and Abigail, Eshet Navala Karmeli. All of his wives have been taken, and he is bitter, turns his bitter into focused anger, and gathers his army together to go chase after Amalek. So, Pasuk Yud. I'm skipping.
I think it's interesting that they, I don't know, in the translation it says sons and daughters.
Yeah, sons and daughters, yes. Yes.
Which is interesting because a lot of times the girls are just not.
It depends on the context. If it's right, a Yichus family issue, they're not. But if it's a description of children as just kind of the emotional connection, for sure. Pasuk Yud, Ve'irdof David hu ve'abam yod ish. 400 of them run, right, the 200 they left behind for various reasons, and Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayimtzu ish mitzvi basadeh. They found an Egyptian in the field. This Egyptian, kind of dying Egyptian lying on the side of the gutter, right, found him. Vayikhu oto al David, they brought him to David. Vaytnu lo lechem, vayochal, vayishku mayim, they gave him food and water. Vaytnu lo felach tveilau, shnei tzimukim vayochal, they gave him some dates and some raisins. Vatashov rucho alav, revived this Egyptian man. Kilo achal lechem lo shatamayim shlosha yamim shlosha lelot. He was lying there, having not eaten for 3 days, and the 3 days is important because that was the raid on Ziklag. Vayomer lo David, lemi ata ve'emi ze ata. Who are you? To whom do you belong? Now listen to his answer because it's very important. Vayomer, na'ar mitzri anochi, I am a young Egyptian boy. Eved Leish Amaleki, a slave to an Amalekite. Vayazveni Adoni ki chalite yom shlosha. My master left me to die because I got sick 3 days ago. And here he tells him the story. Anachnu pashatnu. We, as a marauding troop, as a marauding group, we went up and attacked Negev Hakreti, the Negev, Crates, how do they translate it? I don't think they do.
They do. South. They go, south of Crete.
South of Crete, okay.
Helps
then
a lot.
The south of Crete. The Alasher Yuda, and that which belonged to Yuda, the Al Negev Kalev. So we had came up from the south, attacked all of the yeshuvim that we could get to, including Negev Kalev, and reached Siklag. And then we captured and came back. But in this description, for our purposes, what's so fascinating is the identification of the region known as Negev Kalev. In other words, that famous, that story of Kalev who gives his daughter Achsa a region in the Negev, that whole region then becomes identified by that household's connection and becomes known as, by the language of this Nar Mitzri, slave of an Amalekite, he calls it Negev Kalev. So to describe this man, Naval, who lives here in the area of Ma'on and Carmel, and who is described as Kalibi because he's in the area that is referred to as Negev Kalev, not such a stretch. Right? So you could even argue that he doesn't even have to be of the household of Kalev. He could just be living in the area of Negev Kalev to be called a Kalibi, like somebody who lives in Ephrat is called an Ephrati, whether he's from Ephraim or not, or Yehuda or not, or wherever the. So there are multiple ways to look at that, but the connection between Kalev, the Negev, and Negev Kalev creates a very interesting triangle. Option one. Okay? Option two is even more intriguing. And this is pointed out by a Yerushalmi. I'll show you the Yerushalmi in a moment. But first we need to do a little bit of history. Not that we're not learning history, but lineage history. Can I erase this?
Yes.
The house of Kalev could refer to a different Kalev altogether. Okay, remember what Rashi says. The language of Rashi is that he comes from Bet
Kalev.
What is Bet Kalev? Possibility number one, Kalev ben Yefuneh Negev Kalev. Negev Kalev. Alright, possibility number two. Take a look at. Alright, we're going to do a little bit of family tree today. Well, let's start from a place that's seemingly totally irrelevant. The end of Megillat Rut. David HaMelech. What is the end of Megillat Rut have to do with David HaMelech? Megillat Rut is the story of the marriage between Rut, or Rut HaMoaviyah, and Boaz. And they, at the end of the story, have a child. And the child is referred to by the, is given the name. Where is Megillat Rut?
Page 63
in the art in the Koran.
866.
Right. The last paragraph. Very last paragraph of the Megillah. Very last paragraph of the Megillah. Where is it in the art school?
713.
Very good. 100 pages past the 613. Okay. So Boaz and Naomi have a child, and they name that child
Oved.
And Pasuk Yitzayin ends, Vatikrena Shmo Oved, Hu Avi Yishai, Avi David, father of Yishai, father of David. And suddenly the story of Megillat Ruth, the story of Boaz and Ruth, becomes the story of Ruth's, the story of David's great-great-grandparents. Father, grandfather, you know, great-grandparents, right? Boaz and Ruth are David's great-grandparents, correct? Who avi, right? The child is Oved. Who avi Yishai, avi David. So David's father is Yishai, his grandfather is Oved, his great-grandparents are Boaz and Ruth. And then there's a postscript to the story. Ele toldot Peretz. The text takes us back to Peretz. Who is Peretz? Yehuda and Tamar. When Yehuda and Tamar get together, they have twins. Right? And they have you know why they have twins? Because there were two brothers who died, so it's a double Yibum. So instead of having one, they have two. Right? Because it's a double Yibum. So they have twins, and the second one is... Well, the first one, you remember the story that the parents, because he was pushed forward, and they
tied a string to it,
right. You remember the language of the Pasuk. You don't have to turn to it, I'll just read it very quickly. Pasuk Yehudin Tamar is in Vayeshev. Vehi be'et lidata v'nei to'omim bevitna. She had twins. Vehi be'lidata v'iten yad v'tikach ha'mialedet v'tikshor al yado shani l'mor zeh yatzar yishana. The first one's hand came out. I guess he was breached initially. And they tied a string around it. Vehi k'meshiv yado v'nei yatzar achiv v'tome ma'paratzta lecha paratz. His brother came out first. And said, what are you jumping the gun for? What are you coming? What are you exploding out here? Vehi kvashmo paratz. So then the other one came out that had the red dental on his hand. Okay. Parrots and Zarach.
That was
sort of wrong. All right. V'ele toldot parrots. We are interested in parrots. Why are we interested in parrots? Because of Yehuda, which is Shevet HaMalchut, the firstborn is usually the lineage of Malchus, and the firstborn here is parrots. Even though it could have been Zarach, and therefore I'm interested in the lineage of Peretz. Peretz holidet Chetzron, Chetzron holidet Ram, V'Ram holidet Aminadav, Aminadav holidet Nachshon, Nachshon holidet Salma, V'Salmon or Salma holidet Boaz, Boaz holidet Oved, Oved holidet Yishai, V'Yishai holidet David. It's simple. So there's a simple lineage line between Chetzron, or I should say, we do the whole thing. We start with Yehuda, Zarach we're going to take out of the picture for now, Peretz lead at Chetzron. Wow. Give me the lineage.
Yeah. Ram.
Ram.
And then Ram Aminadav.
Aminadav.
And then Nachshon.
Nachshon.
Then Salma.
Salma.
And Boaz.
Boaz.
Oved.
Yishai.
And David.
David.
All the way.
Fine. Okay. So that's the lineage. Chetzron Ram Aminadav. Nachshon Ben Aminadav, famously familiar with
right.
Chumash.
Right.
Okay. Nasi of Shevet Yehudah.
Generation from Yehuda.
Ma, Boaz, right.
Wow.
Okay. We're all good?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where's Naval?
It's not on there.
Why should it be on here? No reason why it should be on here. Right? This is the lineage of Chetzron. Except that lineage always tells part of the story. Tells the part of the story you want to tell. Right? So, Chetzron has all these families only had one child. You notice?
Those are not just the oldest. Sons.
It could be the oldest. It could be the lineage that's relevant to our discussion, which is
David.
Here. I'm interested in this. And the purpose of Megillat Ruth is to trace David.
Right.
So if I'm interested in Boaz to the end, I'm going to go back to Chetzron only in order to
trace his
lineage back to Yehuda, or back to Peretz in order to trace it to the Malchus line of Yehuda and to establish the regal lineage of David and Malach. It's possible they had other children. We just don't have that information in Megillat Rut, because Megillat Rut's interest is the lineage of David. But there's another Sefer in Tanakh that had a much wider interest, and that's Divrei Hayamim. The labyrinth of Yichus, the labyrinth of and complex world of names and lineage, but we're going to navigate through some of it. Divrei Hayamim Perek Aleph.
You love Divrei Hayamim.
I do not love Divrei Hayamim.
You
I
love,
have.
You always refer
but,
to it.
But it's a very important Sefer to have as a reference, because there's so much that's there that's just not anywhere else.
So what are we
doing? Divrei Hayamim, yeah, Perek, actually Perek Bet. Let's start from the beginning of the Perek, actually from Pasuk Gimel. B'nei Yehuda. Everybody have it?
No.
Divrei Hayamim in that one is what page?
951.
In the art school?
1877.
That was a good year. 1877.
Oh, are you in the
No, oh,
Divrei Hayamim Aleph.
Yes. Oh,
no. No. Start again. There is, just like Malachim and just like Shmuel, there's an Aleph and Bet book. Okay? So you're in Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Bet.
That's 951.
Chronicles 1,
okay.
Chapter 2. Perek Bet. Okay. Now what page are we on?
Yes, 951.
And 1877. Still a good year. All right. Pasuk Gimel. B'nei Yehuda. Okay, so now we're coming back. This is just a list of lineage. Divrei Hayamim, open parentheses. Not, as I tell my kids in school, NFT, right? Not for test. Right? Just general information. Divrei Hayamim, like all the books of Bayit Sheni, Ezra Nehemiah, Daniel, and Divrei Hayamim, they were obsessed with lists of names. Like half the Sefer is lists of names. Just the way it was. Style. Okay, so B'nei Yehuda. You see where we're going? All right, well, don't go ahead. B'nei Yehuda, Er v'Onan v'Shela. Yehuda had three children, Er, Onan, and Shela. Shlosha nolad lo mi Batshua Knanit. Three born from Batshua Knanit. This is the story, the prelude to the story of Yehuda and Tamar, which is in Chumash. Vahi Er b'chor Yehuda ra b'nei Hashem. Er was ra. The play on the words that I spoke about earlier. Died. Vatamar kalato yaldalo et peretz ve'et zarach. It skips the whole story, but essentially, Tamar kalato born him two children, Peretz and Zarach. Okay. Vetko b'nei Yehuda chamisha. So in total, Yehuda had five children. Of course, two of them died, and skips the death of Shelah as well, of Onan as well. There's a lot of the story of Bathsheba is not the story of Yud and Tamar, and sort of the Breshit side of that story is not in Divrei Hayamim. Most negative stories are not in Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim glosses over a lot of that. B'nei Peretz, Chetzron v'Chamul. Peretz had two children, Chetzron and Chamul. Now In Megillat Rut, Chamul's not there, but I wouldn't expect it to be there because that was a very specific lineage. But there's a lot that's not there. Bnei Zerach, Zimri, Etan, Heman, Kalkol, Dara, Kulam, Chamisha. Uvnei Karmi, Achar, Ochei Yisrael, Hashem, Ma'al, Bacherem, Story of Yehoshua, Story of Achan. Bnei Karmi is... Not sure where he came in. Okay.
He's thrown in.
He's thrown in. All right. He's probably one of the, probably a play on one of the other words. Probably Zimri. Nezer Zimri ve'etan, b'nei Karmi, and b'nei Etan. So that's probably them. Pasuk Tet. Here's where life gets interesting for us. Uvnei Chetzron, asher nolad lo, et Yirachme'el, ve'et Ram, ve'et Kluvai.
That's our friend.
Chetzron has three children. Mm-hmm. He has Yirachme'el, he has Ram, and Kluvai. Ram, mm-hmm. Yirachme'el, and
Kluvai.
Kluvai. Now we'll talk about Kluvai in a second, but if you were to assume that these three are identified in chronological order, which we can only imagine they are, so all the Yuchasim here are, okay, then
Yeah,
so what happened to Yirachme'el? So that's the question the Yerushalmi asks. Right? Why is the Malchus, the lineage of Malchus, from Ram and not from Yirachme'el?
Maybe you deceased him.
Maybe, but Gemara has a different possibility that there's something wrong with the lineage, this Absalom lineage, which would fit into the context of Sefer Divayamim, which was trying to identify the purity or the kosher lineage from that which had either married out or gone off into a direction that was not acceptable. It sort of fits into a broader context of Sefer Divrei Hayami. So Ram and Kluvai. Ram holid et Aminadav. Aminadav holid et Nachshon, Nachshon Nasi b'nei Yehuda, Nachshon holid et Salma, Salma holid et Boaz, Boaz holid et Oved, Oved holid Yishai, Yishai holid et. And we read these psukim once before when we did the Yuchas of David. We read that David had seven brothers or eight brothers, depending on how you look at it. B'choro Eliyav, Avinadav Hashini, V'shimi Hashlishi, Netanel HaRevi'i, Radai HaMishi, Otzim HaShishi, David HaShvi'i, V'achiyotehem Tzruya, V'Avigail. The sister by the name of Tzruya and Avigail. How Avigail gets into this mix isn't interesting, but Tzruya is very important for us. Not for now. It took, I've been learning Sefer Shmuel for how many years, over the years since I was a kid. It was a week ago that I realized that the two most important players in David's army are Yoav ben Tzruya, right, and Avishai ben Tzruya, brothers. They are David's nephews, because his sister's name is Tzruya. So Yishai ben Tzruya, we'll see in this next parak, we'll see already, we'll be introduced to Avishai and Yoav ben Tzruya and Avishai. They are David's nephews. So it's important to know. And he also has a sister by the name of Avigail. Uvnei Tzruya, Avishai v'Yoav v'Asael Shlosha. Tzruya, three children, Avishai and Yoav are going to be relevant to our story. Va'avigail yelda et Amasa, va'vi Amasa yeter Hashmeili. Amasa and yeter Hashmeili will also appear in Sefer Shmuel. So all of these names in Sefer Shmuel are connected to the family. The Kalev ben Chetzron holid et Azuva Isha ve'et Yiriot ve'el b'nei Yeshe v'Shava v'Adon. ותמות עזובה ויקח לו כלב את אפרת ותלד לו את חור וחור הוליד את אורי ואורי הוליד את בצלאל. Those are names that should be familiar as well, right? כלב, חור is חור is the one who is mentioned in the story of Chetah Egel. Rashi mentions that they killed Chur, they left Chur in charge and they killed him. Right, that's Chur. Uri olid Betzalel. Betzalel ben Uri is the designer of the Mishkan. Ve'achar b'chatzron el bat machir, Abi Gilad, etc. And the rest of it, I'm going to. And then toward Pasuk of Hey, you have the children of Yirachme'el, but you've been Yirachme'el, Bochor Chatzron, Habochor Ram, Uvonav, V'Oren, V'Otzem, Machia, etc., etc. Children of Ram, various generations, names repeat themselves. But it's so interesting. So from Kalev, or Kluvai, who, by the way, same Kluvai in Pasuk Tet, is called in Pasuk Girchet, the same Kluvai of Pasuk Tet, right? Menechatzon, Hashem Olad, Lod Yerachmael, Betram Ve'et, Kluvai. In Pasuk Girchet, it's Kalev ben Chetzron. Kalev ben Chetzron holid et, so their lineage includes Chor, includes Bitzalel ben Uri, right, from the Mishkan. And we have very famous names in the house of Kalev as well.
So that's not negative.
No. Yeah, so on the contrary, right? This is the generation of Yetziat Mitzrayim, Chur, Betzalel ben Uri, Nachshon ben Aminadav. That's the generation of Yetziat Mitzrayim. It's three generations after Peretz, right? The lineage. If you think about Yehuda comes down to Mitzrayim, Peretz, Chetzon, Ram, Aminadav, Nachshon, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five generations. We're Yetziat Mitzrayim. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 generations later, we're at the story of David. Now look at the Yerushalmi, which you have on the source page. Oh, we're running out of time. Oh, I didn't even notice I went over.
Oh, wow.
Source 6. Shlosha banim ayu lechatzron. Tichtiv uvnei chatzron et yirachmael bet ram bet kluvai. Three children chatzron had. V'ram holid et aminadav. Talks about why Yerachmeel was ousted. Not our issue for now. Ha naval ati min kluvai. This naval that we're talking about, ati min kluvai, he is a descendant of the house of kluvai. Naval in the house of Kalev, or Kalibi, or Kluvai. Think about, forget the vowels for a second, Kluvai and Kalibi.
Pretty close.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when Yud and Vavs are interchangeable. So the Medrash, so the Yerushalmi says, Naval must be a descendant of the house of Kluvai, one of the children of Chetzron. So now I leave you with, I didn't get to the answer to my question of how we connect this to the Kelev and Kilibo, so remind me B'zot Hashem next week to start with that, because that's a piece I didn't get to. But what is interesting here is that when Naval says Mi David Mi Ben Yishai Rabu Avadim Amitpatim Etnei Adonahem,
you know,
I don't know from this David. I never heard of this David. Who is this David?
He's
related. Right?
They are of the same household. Right? So they do. So it's hard to imagine that they don't know each other.
Right. It's a convenient lapse of memory.
But it also means that there may be something going on here beyond just the question of payment. Right, if they have the same generation descendant of the children of Chetzron, Ram and Kluv, and Naval is identified as Kalibi, and we're not talking about Kalev ben Yefuneh, but we're talking about this Kalev, then this Kalev takes us directly back to the question of
his lineage.
Right, takes us directly back to the question of
David's lineage
versus, in other words,
Naval's.
The lineage of Malchus.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know if that's playing a role in the story or not. We'll have to explore that. But there's certainly more going on than just meets the eye. That is the word Kalibi for today's discussion.